Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
The mission of AFA is to inform, equip, and activate individuals and families to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and to give aid to the church here and abroad in its task in fulfilling the Great Commission. The vision of American Family Association is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training in the interest of cultural transformation.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association as we seek to stop the erosion of godly values.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, September 10th, and the world seems to be talking about the August 22nd horrific fatal stabbing of 23-year-old Ukrainian refugee Irina Zarutska, who was fatally stabbed in an unprovoked attack. This was just bizarre, on Charlotte's Lynx Blue Line by a repeat offender with 14 prior arrests. The incident, this is now according to Grok, which is, of course, X's AI that kind of summarizes the news. The incident has triggered national outrage over public safety lapses and criminal justice failures, leading to federal hate crime charges against this defendant, calls for reform from President Donald Trump, and demands for accountability for the judge who released the offender the latest time from North Carolina lawmakers. Bystander apathy and policy critiques have amplified debates on urban crime and bail systems, highlighting the preventable nature of this tragedy. So a lot to digest here. Let's welcome in Oren McIntyre. He's a host at The Blaze. And Oren, I think there are several topics here, but where do you want to begin?
Well, I think really what made this crime come to light, which was the video. You know, this crime is a few weeks old, and had we not had the level of video evidence available in this scenario, I don't know that we ever would have heard about it. I think it would have gotten buried. I don't think that this would have been a major news story. But the absolute brutality in that video, and it's a horrific thing to watch. I really, if you don't have to watch it, I don't even suggest that you do, because just the tear on this woman's face as this man just attacked her brutally out of nowhere, no provocation, no argument prior, no warning. Just she sat down, looked at her phone, and then was basically dead. And the way that the other passengers reacted, the fact that this woman just sat there and cried as she bled out, and no one, not a single person, initially came over to her. Eventually, I think she did have some people come over, but the fact that everyone was just kind of stunned into inaction, and watching that play out on video, I think is harrowing for so many people.
Yeah, I agree. And unfortunately, I am one that did watch the initial video, and then subsequently, I think just yesterday, another video was released that showed kind of the aftermath of her just holding her head and just looking in shock, and then eventually slumping to the floor. And that whole time frame was long enough that the several passengers who saw the entire incident unfold could have at least tried to rush over and render aid. And it's just an awful commentary, I think, about our society, that we have people who, yes, this is a stunning event. I don't think anyone anticipated that level of just an unprovoked, brutal murder to happen on public transportation like that. But even so, the humanity in us should at least want to spark something that goes over to help a poor, innocent woman who is bleeding out. And yet it nobody seemed to care. And I think you're absolutely right, Oren, that this story would have been totally buried but for the video and but for social media, because legacy media didn't even cover this until, you know, prompting by the press secretary yesterday and really taking them to task. But had the attacker been white and the victim been a person of color, a minority, this would have led every single news item for weeks and for months. But because it is a black man that fatally stabbed an innocent white girl, now we're not hearing about it from the legacy media because it doesn't fit their narrative. And this is a really disgusting, frankly, commentary on where we're at in society, that we're not seeing human beings for the innate intrinsic value that we have as human beings made in the image of God. All that the media sees is whether or not a story fits their narrative.
Well, and you know, this is just true on so many levels. So if you know, we of course know that the video of George Floyd launched a thousand riots. It created an immediate backlash. It was, as you say, fanned. The flames were fanned by the media, and people reacted immediately. The stories were everywhere. We had to rename everything in his honor and build statues and hold vigils and all kinds of things in reaction to this. But because this woman is white, the media refuses to even acknowledge until the only reason the media even acknowledged that this happened was to say, oh, well, it's a problem, and MAGA's going to use it to exploit it for their agenda. And even some of the articles coming from places like Axios were saying, oh, well, the real problem is that there are too many cameras around, so they get all of the data, and then it can be leaked, and then people can take that data video footage and spend it for their own narratives, instead of noticing the obvious problem, which is that this woman is brutally murdered. And even though people have said repeatedly, oh, well, maybe we don't know if it's about race, the man is on camera multiple times saying, I got that white girl. And this has led to a much larger discussion, I think the one that the media has been trying to avoid decades, honestly, both on the left and the right. People are looking at the crime data, and they're recognizing that black on white crime is extremely, extremely higher than vice versa. Now, most crime is within races. It's black people killing black people, white people killing white people. But when we look at interracial violence, who commits violence against other races, it is disproportionately many, 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 many times over black Americans killing white Americans. And yet in the media, we have it portrayed that black people are constantly worried about being attacked by cops or bands of racist Americans. But in reality, if we look at the data, it's clear, no, it's actually white Americans who are far more likely to suffer at the hands of someone of another race. And so it just completely blows open the entire narrative we've had from the left from a very long time. And that's why they don't want to talk about stories like this, because sadly, they are far, far more common than people recognize.
Yeah, and it's utterly ridiculous that the media is so myopically focused on their narrative that they aren't even focusing on the fact that they're the ones that have been supporting so much funding to Ukraine and, you know, let's bring in all the refugees and open borders and all of this. And then you have someone who is an actual refugee from Ukraine who is the one getting murdered. And somehow, because that still doesn't fit their narrative, just because she was a beautiful, white woman, then they still are overlooking all of those other facts because this doesn't fit their narrative. And I think they also don't want to focus on a sincere problem that we have within the criminal justice system overall of lack of personal accountability and responsibility and just releasing these criminals time after time after time and saying, well, you know, they have mental health problems. And there were, several, Democrat Democrats that have been on social media saying, you know, basically giving this guy a pass for how horrific this crime was by saying, you know, we have to care for people who have mental health issues. And, you know, I don't care what his motive was. This is somebody who I am 100% in favor of the death penalty for, because this is exactly the type of situation that a death penalty contemplates. And there's absolutely no reason why this person had to be released, why he was even on that train to have the opportunity for this crime. But one of the things that our good friend Charlie Kirk posted, that he said, right now, millions of people are finding out that you can become a magistrate judge in many states without even being a licensed lawyer. Teresa Stokes, who was the last judge to release the perpetrator, never passed the bar exam, fully empowered to let a repeat criminal offender roam the streets to murder innocents. Utter lunacy. I agree, Oren.
No, of course it is. And you know, the system, as we know at this point, is not designed to punish criminals. This man was arrested 14 times, several times for violent felonies. It's not like they were all just shoplifting or something. He had multiple armed robbery charges or battery charges. This is a man who obviously was not going to contribute to society, was not going to be rehabilitated. But our entire system is terrified of actually punishing people, especially, again, due to race. We see that the restorative justice narrative, which actually came out of prisons first, but now is the system that is used in public schools in the United States, focuses on making sure that people of color are not punished, that there's always this opportunity to restore justice rather than to keep someone in jail. And so the idea is that you need to turn these people over as often as possible. No, you know, bail is a big no-no, these kind of things. And the truth is that, obviously, yes, this man should have never been on the streets, and he obviously should receive the death penalty. But our entire system is now designed basically to care for this man and protect him from the justice he deserves. If we're lucky, he might get executed in 20 years. That's the kind of justice system we have now, which is to say, no justice system at all. And you're exactly right to point out that ultimately this is an identity stack, right? This is the left looking at the stack of identities and saying, yes, this is a woman, one of the people we're supposed to protect. Yes, this is a refugee, one of the people that we're saying that we need to protect, that we need to send billions of dollars to Ukraine to protect, you know, to keep evil Vladimir Putin from taking over the world, and we have to shelter people like this from it. But ultimately, even though she has all those other identities that the left values and says they want to protect, she's white, and the other guy is black. And that's the final identity. That's the one that actually matters to them. Not her refugee status, not her status as a woman. At the end of the day, there's one Trump card, and she did not hold it. And that, I think, is something that is stunning just pretty much everyone as they watch the media and the left just flail about this. It's insane.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really the problem, is that the left is going to identity politics instead of just looking at the facts of the case. That it doesn't matter what his race was. It doesn't matter what her race was. All that matters is that this was an unprovoked attack on an innocent person. And it wouldn't matter if it was a white person killing a person of color. It wouldn't matter whether this was, you know, man on woman, man on man, whatever. Like, none of that actually matters compared to the utter heinousness of this type of crime and the fact that he was even on that train to be able to perpetrate this in the first place. And I think we need a sincere reevaluation of our entire criminal justice system that allows for this type of person, 14 prior arrests. And according to news reports, the last one was for armed robbery, and he only served about 5 years in prison, clearly had mental health issues, and there he was, just sitting there on the train. And you have a magistrate judge, and for those who aren't aware, a magistrate judge is someone who hasn't gone through the actual judicial nomination process of that particular state. They're just hired by the county or district to help with the caseload. And in this case, this judge who let him out never even passed the bar exam, wasn't even a lawyer. So it was just basically somebody just hired to make these types of decisions to help with the caseload in North Carolina. And clearly, Oren did a really bad job. And I agree with the North Carolina members of Congress and otherwise who are calling for her removal.
Yeah, no, obviously there needs to be accountability for people like this, the judges who are turning these, you know, just absolute animals back out onto the street with little care about what it will do to the people of the community. They should absolutely be held accountable. We are the most powerful nation in the world. Women should be able to travel in our large cities without fear, in the middle of the night, without a small amount of fear, because that is the kind of country that we should be. And the idea that we can't do that is ridiculous. We know it can be done, but we're choosing not to do it. This woman's death was a policy choice.
Yeah, that's so well said. Orrin McIntyre, really appreciate your commentary. You can follow him at The Blaze and also on X. I'd encourage you to do that and also read his commentary in The Blaze. Always has some really great thought-provoking commentary. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies preborn has helped save just this year. How many mothers preborn has come alongside with practical and spiritual resources to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. Their goal is to save 70,000 babies by the end of the year. And they can't do that without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound, the moment everything changes. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny? To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are still discussing the absolutely heinous and brutal murder of a Ukrainian refugee in North Carolina, completely unprovoked, just a absolutely mind-boggling event that most of us, even though we are all sinful human beings, we're all capable of some evils. I don't even think that most of us can comprehend the level of absolute depravity it takes for someone to just totally unprovoked, in cold blood, commit this type of atrocity. I mean, just watching this video, and as Orrin said, it's just in the last segment, it's so heart-wrenching that if you don't have to watch it, don't. But it is just something that I think a lot of us can't even fathom. And President Donald Trump yesterday released a video responding to the national outrage, and this is what he said.
For far too long, Americans have been forced to put up with Democrat-run cities that set loose savage, bloodthirsty criminals to prey on innocent people. Really, very, very innocent people. In every place, they control radical left judges, politicians, and activists, and they've adopted a policy of catch and release for thugs and killers. In Charlotte, North Carolina, we saw the results of these policies when a 23-year-old woman who came here from Ukraine met her bloody end on a public train. And here's a picture of it. This is the picture of it. And this is a picture of the woman, a beautiful young girl that never had problems in life, with a magnificent future in this country. And now she's dead. She was slaughtered by a deranged monster who was roaming free after 14 prior arrests. We cannot allow a depraved criminal element of violent repeat offenders to continue spreading destruction and death throughout our country. We have to respond with force and strength. We have to be vicious just like they are. It's the only thing they understand. 24 of the top 25 most dangerous cities in America are run by Democrat mayors. 50 people were murdered in Chicago in recent weeks, with hundreds being shot. And it's time to stop this madness. The people of our country need to insist on protection, safety, law, and order. We have proven that it can be done because we did it right here in D.C., in District of Columbia, the capital of America, was a bloodthirsty, horrible, dangerous place, one of the worst. And now it's a crime-free city, and we're going to keep it that way. It can be done. It can happen fast. All we want is, please, Mr. President, we need help. Chicago needs help. Other cities need help. We'll do what has to be done because we're going to make America safe again. And that includes our big cities. We're going to make those cities safe. Thank you.
All right. Let's welcome in Congressman Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana. And Congressman, your reaction to this horrific crime and also President Trump's remarks.
Yeah. Good morning, Jenna. Great to be with you again. You know, I appreciate that President Trump is addressing an issue that has been overlooked for so long. I mean, you know, I live in northeast Indiana, so about an hour and a half, 2 hours from Chicago. And, you know, growing up, they're always listening to the Chicago Cubs games, going to Chicago. It's a, you know, great international city, but what they have allowed to happen in Chicago to become a criminal center is so un-American. It's evil. I mean, you know, we know it's a place where there's drug traffic. We know there's a place, it's a place where there's human trafficking because of just the basic, you know, travel lanes that that go through Chicago. But when you have strong leadership like President Trump is showing, you can shut that down. You can shut that off. And you know, back to this heinous murder, you know, evil is still running around the world. And you know, people don't, we cannot have it and cannot allow it here in America. And what President Trump has done in Washington, D.C., the fact that the murders have dropped because there's National Guard making sure that people are safe, making sure that our streets are safe. I mean, I'm good friends with the congressman who lost an intern who was standing on a street innocently and is all of a sudden shot down randomly by three young guys. And, you know, this sort of stuff is just not, should not be tolerated. And so I appreciate President Trump and applaud him for what he's doing. And I think the Democrats are just, again, they're on the wrong side of an issue that so many people care about in this country, and that's our safety.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I also applaud President Trump for directly responding to this, seeing what happened and having a very full and robust statement saying that, you know, we shouldn't have to live like this. We should not have these types of policy decisions in Democrat-run cities that lead to these types of atrocities. And, you know, that gets me to the question of criminal justice reform, because there are members of Congress in North Carolina and even elsewhere that are now calling for the removal of this magistrate judge who isn't even a lawyer. I mean, was just hired by, you know, the district or county to help with the caseload, and clearly is not equipped to deal with responsible decision making in that role, and allowed this perpetrator to be in the position to have the opportunity to commit this type of atrocity. And so, you know, what should be done from a policy standpoint when we look at how the Democrats overall and the left approach criminal justice versus the right and the biblical worldview, which is that justice from the state and the government needs to protect our rights. It's not about, oh, these poor people who don't have, you know, we're not going to hold them responsible for their actions. Well, of course we should.
Yeah, well, you know, I think of the verse that says, you know, when the righteous lead, the people rejoice. And I think that's what is needed right here. I mean, righteousness means we're going to follow right. And I'm working with the Christian community right now over in Syria, where Christians are being slaughtered in the Soweda area in Syria, which is southeast Syria. The Christians there, they don't have militia to defend themselves. They have to depend on the Druze community, which is also being under is under attack as well, which is a great friend to Israel. But you know what? After talking with the Christians there, there's like, there is no police there to help protect them. There is no judicial system there to protect them. So, you know, that's the extreme. Here in America, we have a judicial system. We have police force. We have law enforcement. But if the laws are not enforced, what's the difference? And you know what? When criminals can go out and attack a lady who's on a jog, on a bike trail in the middle of the night and get away with it, and has, we find out later, had been charged in 14 times. It's like, why? Who's responsible for this? And that's what I think we all need to know: is the judges, the prosecutors, the judicial system has failed in some places, not all places, but in this place it obviously did. And I think that you'll see that it's going to be in Democrat-run areas who basically have said, you know what, disregard the law. I mean, that's what the Democrat Party has become, Jenna. They're defending criminals. They're defending illegal aliens. They're defending this mistreatment of children when it comes to transgenderism, because I believe that's a crime, what people are allowing young people to do to themselves. And they're just basically the party of no law. And so President Trump is leading on this. The Republicans in Congress are right behind him, standing strong with him, and we'll continue to support him doing what he's doing.
And I'm speaking with Congressman Marlon Stutzman from Indiana. You can follow him on all social media platforms, X, Facebook, Instagram. I'd encourage you to do that. And, you know, you're absolutely right that this comes down to a difference in worldview. It comes down to a difference than in policy. And what we're seeing, the contrast between Democrat-run cities versus the Republicans' view of law and order, really is the difference between what society do we want to live in. And when President Trump is wanting to send the National Guard into Chicago, for example, to say, you know, we can't just allow all of these murders to take place. I mean, it seems like, you know, every weekend there are several murders that occur in Chicago. That shouldn't happen in an American city. And yet, instead of welcoming that help and saying, you know, yeah, we need to recontemplate our policies here, Mayor Johnson is pushing back and somehow, you know, calling Trump a dictator over this. I mean, it's utterly ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Jenna, because I had a liberal reporter asking me, saying, you know, well, what would you say if President Trump sent in the National Guard into Indianapolis? And I said, you know what? First of all, I don't think he would have to do that, because Governor Braun, a Republican in Indiana, is going to address the problem first. And then if he says, hey, I need help, he's going to call President Trump and say, you know what, send me help, because I need, you know, we've got a problem in Indianapolis. Well, that's not what's happening in Chicago. I mean, Governor Pritzker in Illinois and the mayor of Chicago, they're basically saying, like, you stay out, because they're not even saying we have this under control. They don't even say that, because they know they don't have it under control. And now finally, there's a couple of Democrats in Chicago saying the Democrat Party's on the wrong side of this. And this basically just comes down again to righteousness versus evil. And evil is still running around on our streets in America, because we have let law and order go to the side. You know, the Democrat Party has pushed it to the side. Joe Biden allowed for the border to be wide open. We don't know who is in this country. That's another issue we're dealing with. And President Trump is fixing so many different issues. And as I said again, you know, there's Christians around the world that are facing such horrible evil, but we'd never expect that to happen here in America, but unfortunately it is.
Yeah, this does not look like the America that the founders envisioned, that the whole goal of government as a God-ordained institution is given to protect and preserve the rights that God gave us, including the right to life, the right to be safe in our communities, the right to ensure that when evil is perpetrated, that those perpetrators are held accountable. And yes, we have due process. We have all of the safeguards to ensure that the state isn't over-prosecuting. Obviously, we've seen lawfare in this country, but it seems like from the left side, we've seen them advocate for the worst of the worst, because on one hand, they're perpetrating lawfare against President Trump and his allies and conservatives and pro-lifers. And then on the other hand, they're also allowing for, and it seems like almost incentivizing, criminal activity. And so they're utterly lawless. And yet people like Governor Pritzker and, you know, Mayor Johnson and all of these other Democrats, I mean, Gavin Newsom, who's probably going to run for president in 2028. I mean, they're all still office holders. And it's I think, frustrating to the American people that the perpetrators of this, that are ultimately the office holders that are responsible for ensuring that our God-given rights are protected, don't have any accountability.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I tell you what, I mean, when it comes to elections, this is where our cities, and I pray and hope that people in our cities are realizing this. Let me give you a quick example, because in Indiana, we have seen 100,000 people directly from Illinois move to Indiana over the past several years. So people are leaving those states. But you know what? Not everybody can leave. Not everybody can pick up and move. And it's the most vulnerable, and it's the poor who can't just pick up and leave a dangerous city like Chicago. And that's what's scary for them. And I just pray and hope that somehow a message gets through. And I think it will, because when President Trump is offering help, we're seeing interviews of single moms, black moms in Chicago say, you know what? I lost my son. Send help. Send somebody that's going to keep our streets safe. And I hope that breaks through, because that's the only way. How else do we fix it other than President Trump sending in National Guard and law enforcement to clean it up? And if they're not going to fix it themselves, we as Americans can't just let our big cities, our great cities. We're not the great cities that, you know, we used to be the shining light in around the world with our cities. But now they're becoming, you know, dangerous areas for people to go to. We're not building the great buildings that other cities around the world are. And that's what President Trump's vision is to get back to that. And you have to have safe streets in order to do that.
Yeah. And it's also impossible to have, you know, the National Guard and law enforcement at literally every juncture or opportunity point. And so, you know, I mean, if there had been law enforcement on that train, hopefully that would have deterred this individual, or at least there would have been some pushback. I mean, just the absolute inaction of all of these bystanders also, I think, is a really sad commentary on society and how we have so de-emphasized the value of life in our society, and the necessity of helping others when there are tragedies like this and when they're sincerely in need. And I think that's also because of a leftist liberal worldview that has secularized our society to the point that we're so self-interested instead of recognizing our God-given duty to our fellow man.
Yeah, and I think, you know, our politicians in our cities are out of touch. If police officers in Los Angeles, in Chicago, would know that their mayor's office, their chief of police are behind them, they didn't sign up to be a police officer to go out into the streets and be vulnerable. They signed up to be police officers to go out and protect and serve their communities. And what's happened is these city councils, the mayors, they've all sent the message to the police office or the police departments that they're going to either be defunded, they're going to take away their ability to defend themselves. And then, you know, if something happens and it goes to the courts, the criminal's going to walk free. These police officers have got to be so discouraged right now, because what they signed up to do, which they knew was a dangerous job. I mean, they knew when you put a gun on your hip and put a uniform on, you could be a target by a criminal. And so they didn't sign up thinking that this is going to be an easy job. They knew it was going to be hard, but now they don't even have the support from their leadership in their cities. And so that's why it's got to be so discouraging to them, but hopeful. And I mean, we saw this in Washington, D.C. when President Trump comes in and supports the law enforcement, takes it over. And all of a sudden, Mayor Bowser of D.C. starts to talk about, oh, this is actually working. And admitting that it's working. And it's like, of course it will. I mean, good can always overcome evil, but you have to be willing to be bold and to stand in the face of it.
Yeah, you have to be willing to be bold and actually consider others as greater than yourself. And that is what law enforcement does every day. And I think you're right that a lot of them have been so discouraged by, again, leftist policies that will say, oh, if you even try to, arrest someone and you even just touch them, then somehow that's harm and that's over, that's excessive use of force and all of these other ridiculous things that then don't even allow officers to do their job competently. And so you're binding their hands. And so they think, well, how can I possibly even do this? But Congressman Stetson, before I let you go, I want to follow up on one other thing, though. When you're talking about the importance of elections, all of these redistricting fights around the country and the census that President Trump has called for, even mid-decade, is really also flying in the face of Democrats' policies, because they have for too long wanted non-citizens to be counted in order to honestly have more seats in Congress and to rig the way that the electoral map is set. And so there is a redistricting fight going on in Indiana. What's the status of that and your opinion overall on this whole fight?
Yeah, well, I support the redistricting efforts because, as you mentioned, and this is something, Jenna, and we were talking about this the other day on the Hill, Congress or Republicans, we work towards good policy. Democrats work for politics, and they want to win more than anything else. And we didn't realize what they were up to after the 2020 election. There's a lot of things that we didn't know what they were up to in the 2020 election. But after the census in 2020, they drew their districts in states like California. Look at Illinois. I mean, the Illinois map is a joke with gerrymandering. And then look at New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts. But they drew their maps in a way that would only favor Democrats. And, Indiana, you could probably have a kindergarten class draw the maps in Indiana, and it would be 9 Republicans to 0 Democrats. Well, it's actually 7-2. Well, so my argument is look, they have allowed all of these illegals to come into sanctuary states like California and Illinois, and they counted them in the census. They are a non-citizen is counted in the census. Well, then we base our U.S. House of Representative districts based off of the population. And so California has a much higher advantage. Illinois has a much higher advantage. And so my belief is that we have to do this now, because it's unfair to citizens of America who actually get to vote. We in Indiana, we're underrepresented in Washington. Other states who don't allow illegals to come flocking into their states are underrepresented in Washington. If there are 12 million illegals in this country that have been counted, that could potentially be 10 seats that should be somewhere else rather than in a state like California or Illinois. So that's why I think we need to redistrict and make sure that we push back and make sure Hoosiers are represented equally.
Yeah, really well said. And, this is all about fair and accurate representation that the Republicans are wanting, instead of having non-citizens counted just to inflate their numbers like the Democrats. And so, what's your response to someone like Governor Gavin Newsom, who's just, claiming, I think it's always projection that the Democrats are always suggesting that Republicans are doing what the Democrats themselves have been doing. And then when we just are calling for a fair and equal playing field, then suddenly, we're the ones that want to change the rules. I mean, I think it's absurd.
It absolutely is. Whatever the Democrats accuse us of doing, they're doing, like you said. And but I think, go ahead. Okay, you know what? Because Missouri is looking at redistricting, Florida, Ohio, Indiana, Texas, and the numbers, they can do it in California, but they've already maxed out. That's the thing. That's what's going to prove out again. The Democrats are going to say, if you're going to redistrict, we're going to redistrict. And they're not going to get as many seats because they've already maxed out. They've already done this. Massachusetts, 9 districts, 0 Republicans. I mean, New England, there are no Republicans in the New England states. I think Pennsylvania is the first state you get to that has a Republican representative. New Jersey has some. And, of course, New York. But anything further up in the Northeast, there's none. And so it just shows you the difference in that they have played this game already, And now, you know what, why do we have to do this? Oh, well, it's because they've already cheated and they've already done this. And so I kind of compare it to like the British Army during the Revolutionary War. The British Army says, we're going to fight according to the laws of the rules of war. But you know what? Americans are like, we can't beat them at that game. So they go out and they fight a different way. And so that's what I think we as Republicans need to realize. They fight a different way. And we're going to have to fight fire with fire. And it's because we're fighting for our constituents. It's not fair for Hoosiers to be underrepresented in Congress.
Yeah, well said. Well, we have to take a break here, and I know that you have a couple of other things to get to, but so appreciate your time this morning, Congressman Marlon Stutzman, and your fight on Capitol Hill for fairness, for justice, for truth, for accountability. I mean, all of the things that Americans, regardless of party, we should all be for. We should be for these principles that ensure that our policy then is shaped in a way that we all can remain safe, we can exercise our God-given rights, and we can count on those in government, whether it's the federal level, the state level, the local level, even down to these county-appointed, hired magistrates, will do their jobs to ensure that we aren't over-prosecuted in lawfare, but we're not under-prosecuted if you're actually a criminal. So we'll talk more about this in the next segment, but follow Representative Stutzman at Rep Stutzman, and we'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we've been talking throughout this program about the utter horrendous, heinous murder of this young woman on a North Carolina public transit train, totally unprovoked, sparking so many different points of topics and public policy discussions, from the need for law enforcement to the need for actual judges, not just these magistrates that clearly have no bearings on how to reasonably assess the danger of offenders to society when they're looking at putting them back out on the streets. Matt Walsh from the Daily Wire posted this image, and this is the young girl looking up at the attacker after being stabbed. And it's just the look on her face is just terrible. And he says, this image will define the new civil rights movement. We have a right to use public accommodations without being butchered in our seats. We have a right to safe communities where violent animals are rounded up and caged. This is not just a local crime. It's a civil rights issue. And I think he's right in that. And the very strong language that he uses in this post is to emphasize the point that this is not okay. This is not what government should allow if we have a government institution that is legitimate according to why God created the institution of government. And so when we go back to the very foundation, and I think a lot of the left and the public at large has kind of forgotten why government exists. I mean, if you talk to, you know, Nancy Pelosi, it's probably for her own purposes and stock trading and getting rich, right? A lot of politicians use government for their own purposes. They use government for their own ends. And a lot of people, in response to that, the average citizen looks at government as just this non-revenue generating institution that we pay a lot of taxes to, that tells us what to do, that prevents us from easily just living our lives because we have to go and, you know, get permits for everything. You know, we have to deal with government at some basic levels, and we don't particularly like it. And so there is kind of this view of government in American society that I think is non-biblical. And so when we go back and look at why God ordained the institution of government, we have to recognize that our government currently is not reflecting the legitimate purpose of why governments are ordained and established. And so when we push back against the injustices or the overregulation of society, that is a good thing when we're looking at how our government is acting in illegitimate ways. But instead of just pushing back on government and saying, well, you know, you're not doing enough or you're doing too much, and we reject government as an entire premise, no, we have to go back and say, what is the purpose of government as an institution? And we know that God instituted three spheres of government in society: the civil government, which we're talking about right now, the church government, and the family government. And ultimately, the civil government, the entire purpose is to promote good and restrain evil in society, to ensure that the church can freely exercise our religion, our beliefs. We can freely worship God and do all of the things that God commands to us in the context of church, and also in the context of family, that we as individuals have the right to exercise our decision-making. This is why, for example, in the state of Florida, and we'll talk about this later this week, hopefully with Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins here in my home state of Florida, where we now, Florida has removed all vaccine mandates. And the left, of course, is going crazy about that by saying, well, you know, do you want diseases like, you know, polio to come back? No, it's not about that. It's about saying that the government has no right to tell an individual or a parent what the best decision for their own health and safety is. That is a freedom and a liberty and a right for decision making that we own. We actually, as individuals and also as parents, have rights of government. And what rights are those? Well, within the government of our own lives, governing, self-governing, that's what that means, and governing our families, and also governing our churches. And the civil government is not the government of all things. It's not the only form of government that exists in society or within our daily lives. And yet the left somehow has the impression, and some on the right, and this is what dictatorships are really, is that the civil government has the power to enact any type of law and regulation and legislation that it just thinks within the form of government, whether that's, you know, the king unilaterally, or that's through the legislature, all that, or the judiciary, to then compel the citizens to do or to prohibit anything that it just thinks that would be good, quote unquote, for society. Well, no, our system of government here in America specifically requires limited powers of government. That is the key to what is supposed to make America great, because that is a biblical premise. The biblical premise of government as limited says that the government is confined only to those things that we, the people, through our consent, have given to government, because we collectively understand and see that those are legitimate functions of government. And that includes criminal justice. There are protections, of course, in our Bill of Rights. In fact, there are more protections against criminal prosecutions for the individual, because we know the state has so much power, than any other protection that is textually put into our Bill of Rights. And that's because the state has so much power. But that doesn't mean that due process means that we have no personal accountability or responsibility, or that the state can't impose the death penalty, for example, on someone like this perpetrator, who I believe absolutely justly deserves the death penalty for this type of heinous crime. And so when we look at what the government is supposed to do in a leftist framework, the government, the civil government, is not imposing restrictions on evil. They're allowing evil to flourish through the trans agenda, through lack of criminal justice reform, through all of their policies. They're not restraining evil, but they're also not promoting good. They're not incentivizing traditional marriage anymore. They're not incentivizing families to flourish. They're not incentivizing churches to be at the epicenter of society. So we've gotten everything absolutely backward. And so for Christians, we have to go back and not just look at each of these things as a policy decision or things that are kind of a one-off and piecemeal it together like the smorgasbord of policy. We have to go back to, what does the Bible require of government as a legitimate institution anywhere? Then we can say, what does American government require? And then build up our policy in every aspect and subject matter from there. That is the comprehensive biblical worldview of government. So then when we say the government should promote good and restrain evil, we can advocate successfully for things like closing our borders, for things like law enforcement, and to say, leftist Democrats, if you're not imposing law on your own city, then absolutely we'll send in the National Guard, and we're advocates for that because that is a good and righteous thing. When the death penalty hopefully is being sought against this perpetrator, we can say yes, absolutely, because the Bible says in Romans 13, the government, the civil government, carries the sword, and when you shed innocent blood, then your blood should be shed. And we can advocate for those principles from a biblical worldview, not just Republican versus Democrat, or, you know, Trump versus Pritzker, or whatever else. We need to always advocate from a biblical comprehensive worldview. As always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.